Welcome to the Wags of SCI podcast, where we discuss life, love, and caregiving after spinal cord injury, hosted by Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget.
Both of our partners are quadriplegics, and after connecting online in 2017, we began the advocacy and support group Wags of SCI, which is an acronym for Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury.
We know firsthand the challenges that come with living this lifestyle, and our mission is to spread education, awareness, and positivity from our unique perspectives.
Join us each week as we tackle deep discussions around balancing life as a caregiver and a lover to someone with a spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wags of SCI podcast. Here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Wags of SCI podcast with your hosts, Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget. Today, we are going to dive into a topic that is very near and dear to most of our hearts. For anybody who identifies themselves as a caregiver, this is something that happens quite often. And we just want to share, how do we manage these stressors when your home care does not show up, and what we do about that? So before we get into that, I am going to hand it over to Brooke.
So yeah, this topic is really, really personal to us, and we have a lot of recent news and information on this subject that we're going to talk to you guys about in this episode. So stay tuned for that. Before we get started, we want to introduce to you our sponsors of this episode, near and dear to our hearts: Robin Wishart of Wishart Brain and Spine Law. Robin is our official legal advocate for the Wags of SCI team, and she has been behind the scenes for almost 4 years now, helping us with our cases as we navigate the waters of trying to change the system and trying to get paid for being caregivers. So Robin and her team are specialists in brain and spine law, and she works all over North America as an advocate and a lawyer to help assist you, your partner, people you know, anyone who has issues with the system, she can help. So if you need help with your paperwork, benefits, if you need resources in your area, or just lost as to what your rights are, please visit brainandspinelaw.com, or you can visit wagsofsci.com and click on the legal resources tab for more information as to how Robin works with us and for you. Our second amazing sponsor is Annalisa and John, a wonderful quad wife and quad from Florida who run the store Rolling in Paradise. So Rolling in Paradise is an adaptive equipment company, and they specialize in that sort of equipment of all shapes and sizes, all forms, including hand bikes, hand cycles. They also have adaptive equipment that is available, and they ship all over North America. So if you need a rep that knows this life, they always talk about how we are you, because they are. They know the struggles that pertain to living this life, and they know how to get you the equipment that you need. They're also VA approved, and they will just work with you to make sure you get what you need for your adaptive equipment goals. So please visit rollingparadise.com and tell Annalisa that Brooke and Elena sent you. All right, let's dive into this hot, juicy topic of something that all of us that are caregivers to quadriplegics take issue with, and that is, what happens when your home care doesn't show up, and why is this a problem? So we're going to get into that, and we're going to get into some recent stuff that we're doing around that to bring more awareness to this topic, because I know in the community there's lots of awareness on this. You know, we all know what it's like when our home care doesn't show up. We all know what it's like when things don't go as planned and we have to step in, and kind of what happens after that and how we handle that stress. And it's a lot of the times it's very unexpected. So let's talk about you, Elena. What has been your experience as of late that inspired this episode?
Well, this happens, to be quite honest, I'll begin by saying we feel quite blessed to have a great team of home support that has taken years for us to establish. We have the same two workers nursing that come into our home once a week. once a day, once a day in the mornings for an hour and a half. My partner, Dan, is a C5, C6 quadriplegic. We have had multiple assessments, both with private OT and community nursing, our healthcare system nursing for the area, for him to be assessed for the hours. Now, this is a tricky one because had a spouse not been in the picture, he would qualify for a lot more care and a lot more hours. And this is a topic that we talk about quite frequently, I would say. So getting back to what inspired this episode, I would say last week, it was Wednesday. We wake up the same time that we always do. I woke up an hour earlier. I wanted to get a few things done in the house, get some coffee on. Sometimes we'll lie in bed for an hour if I get up early and just have our coffee to start the day off right? So on this particular Wednesday, it was around, I think, 15 minutes past the time that home care comes. Now, for anybody who does utilize these resources from the healthcare system in your area, you will know that the workers are extremely tight with their time. That means that they are allocated a certain amount of time per client that typically does not include travel time to and from the next client. So for them to be late is very unusual, unless something has gone wrong. And on this particular day, it was about quarter after, no home care. So Dan called the home care company in our area and he said, "Hey, listen, like it's quarter after seven. Just wondering what's going on. I have not heard anything from you guys. Zero communication. Is what's going on?" And to which the administrative staff on the other end replied, "Oh, sorry. Somebody called in sick. We won't have anybody for you for another 2.5 hours. So 2.5 hours, you will have to lie in bed waiting for somebody to show up to come get you out of bed, shower you, do your bowel program, get you dressed. Yeah, sorry, that's it." And that's typically how a normal conversation with home care goes, is that it is extremely disorganized, which is quite surprising for such a large company, and a large company that thousands of people in the area rely on to begin their day, to go to get ready for their job, to go to their career, to go to maybe some medical appointments, to show up for life. And this has been a long-standing topic and a huge issue in the community for a long time, is that how does somebody with a disability show up on time to their career or their job if other circumstances such as these prevent them from being able to carry on with their lives? And that's all we want, is some normalcy in our lives. We just want to be able to do things, to get back to our lifestyle, to get back to some sort of quote unquote, I don't want to say new normal, but being able to continue with their lives like everybody else after spinal cord injury. So anyways, so at that point I looked at Dan and I just said, "You know what? Forget it. Call them back. Tell them, don't send anybody. 9:30 is much too late. By the time he's done getting, you know, transferred out of bed, getting into the commode, going, having his suppository, going over the toilet, from the toilet to the shower, having a shower, from the shower back into bed, getting dressed, from getting dressed into his chair. By the time that all happens, it's going to be probably 11 o'clock. Who can call their employer and say, listen, I'm going to be extremely late today? Because your employer doesn't really care, right? People have businesses. People have their own companies to run. You can only call so many times and give so many excuses before you no longer have a job. It's the same thing for if you're in education and you're taking some university courses. You can't just call your professor. Your professor's in class. It's too late. You can't just say, sorry, I won't be there. That's not how life works. So anyway, so I just said to him, I said, you know what? Forget it. I'll get you up. I'll get you ready. I think I had booked like a a class that morning that I just canceled. I rearranged my routine. I get up really early and then I start working right away, usually in my pajamas. So then that way, when things like this happen, I can sort of put my life together in a way that I can have breaks in between to be able to help fill in, do things that need to be done around the house or for Dan. So that is what we did. And I have to say, I think this was the first time in a long time that I wasn't resentful or bitter or annoyed. I just sort of was like, what are you going to do? I mean, there's really not that many options. This is what needs to be done. So I guess let's get up and let's get going.
Well, I think that there's a real commonality here between what you were saying about kind of like, fuck it, I'll just do it. And the amount of frustrating situations that we discuss on the Wags of SCI Facebook private group. There's a lot of commonalities here. And a lot of it involves, you know, do I want to watch my partner lay in bed and wait for his care when I could just help him? There's that guilt associated with that too. But then there's also the, how many times does this have to happen before it becomes too much sort of thing? You know, we talked about during quarantine and COVID and all that stuff, how we stepped in and took over for our partners and how much stress that was. And this isn't just a you and I situation. This is a lot of women in the community feel this way, where it's just like these things build up and they build up and they build up. And so I would say from my perspective, they caught you on a really good day where you weren't too stressed out and you'd probably had a good sleep and, you know, you were willing to step in and care for him. But my thing is like, how many times does this happen? We hear one of these stories at least once a day on the private group where it's like, well, the home care didn't show up again and I had to go home from work and help him. There's a lot of that where it's like, I had to leave work to help. And it's like, it's troubling to me because we live in a society in North America where the government and systems are so obsessed with touting their own horn and saying, we look after people, you know, we have people's best interests at hand. And a lot of able-bodied people, especially, you know, even our friends and family, they say, oh, if you get injured, the government takes care of you, right? It's very socialist. However, that is just to me a ruse or a facade, because when it comes down to it, like you said earlier, these people are so, the people that work for the agencies and the home care that actually help sustain these people's lives, they are so understaffed and overworked and underappreciated. And their system itself is so broken. And the people that are disabled and their caregivers and partners are the ones that suffer. And so I like talking about this openly because people need to see the reality of the situation. They need to hear about how it actually is. So they don't have that attitude of like, well, if I get injured, I'll get looked after. It's like, will you get looked after? Like, this is one of the reasons why disabled people have an extremely high unemployment rate, because they have to rely on other people to get to their jobs. And more often than not, they can't really be relied on. So,
right. Who can hold down a job? I was talking to one of my neighbors actually, who's also a wheelchair user who's got CP. And she was saying, she said, like, I remember for a couple of years, she was going to school and applying for job after job, job after job. And she says, you know, I feel like people are hesitant to give me a job because I'm in a wheelchair. They see that. And then they all of a sudden have hesitancy around whatever it is. And then she came to the conclusion. She's like, I swear it's because they probably think that I can't show up, or maybe something will happen that I might not be able to show up because there's so many more complications. And I remember looking at her and like getting very emotional. I was really quite touched because these are things, even though my partner is a wheelchair user and has a disability, I am not. I will never understand the true embodiment of what that's like to be discriminated against because of a system that has completely failed you. And like you said, a system that is solely set up on family caregivers. And that's what a lot of the time happened, was that she would call her parents to come in and help. And she had the CECL program, the self-directed program where caregivers, she hired her own caregivers, but a lot of the time they wouldn't show up. She said, I spent 4 out of 7 days in bed. Right? I mean, how do we set up this system that is going to be able to work for everybody and benefit everybody? Well, a lot of the time, family caregivers will get burned out. There has to be some sort of recognition and some sort of compensation so that we can all take care of ourselves and then be able to show up for our family members. Because let's face it, our system is highly dependent on family caregivers. We talk about this all the time. I mean, we can talk about this until we're blue in the face, right?
Yeah.
But that's the truth. That is the truth. And what happens is, you know, I was actually talking to my aunt the other day, and I had a long conversation with her on the phone, about 2 hours. And we sort of we talked about lots of other things, but this came up as well around the ER visit that Dan had a couple of weeks ago. He was having horrible, horrible pain and spasms and so much discomfort. And, you know, sharing that space with a loved one who's under so much distress can be extremely difficult for the partner as well, because you want to help, but you know that there's only so much you can do. You can only really hold space for the other person for so long until you're just, it kind of beats you down because you feel so helpless. Anyways, and I sort of now can sit back and look at it from a different perspective as to like what happened during that period of 4 days of like pure darkness, Dan needed to go to the ER, what happened throughout that time. And still just looking at it and seeing it, I sort of thought to myself, it would have been really nice to have somebody else come in and be like, don't worry, I got the dishes. I'm just going to sweep up for you. I'm going to make you some meals. You just go have a nap. Instead of being like, when do we jump up and go to the ER? Or how long do we sit in the ER? ER visits are never pleasant for anybody. But also the lack of understanding by the physicians at the ER around things like AD is very limited, that you end up sort of asking yourself, why am I like, should we even go? Why are we even going? You're going to come back with just as many answers as you had before you left. And that can be extremely frustrating. So, and we hear this in the SCI community all the time, the very small amount of information that doctors have in ER and the very long wait list to get in to see your physiatrist. It's extremely long to be able to go see a physician that actually knows what's going on. And a lot of the time they just shove a prescription in your face and they tell you, go home, go fill it, go home, go relax. That's a good one.
Well, I don't mean to get too political in this podcast because we like to stay out of that, except when it comes to disability rights, of course. And systems in general around disability. But I mean, like we talked about earlier and like we've talked about in the past, we live in a society that prides itself on, we can look after you. Our systems will look after you. And that is the actual opposite of the actual truth, which is why it's so important that we're talking about this right now, because people walking around that don't have severe disabilities or don't know anybody with a severe disability, or don't have any serious health concerns that need to be addressed by a system that has been set up to care for you, they don't know how serious it is. And they want more government control and more intervention and more government assistance. And the systems are already broken. Adding more to it is not going to help it. It's going to exacerbate the problem. And this is why it's really, really important for all of us in the caregiving community, but also the SCI community, to stand up and say, wait a second, the system's already so broken. They're, you know, making money off our free labor and, you know, our partners are not getting cared for like they should. And it's not the fault of the caregivers, the hired caregivers and the nurses out there. It's not their fault. Right? This is a whole systemic issue that needs to be.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, it's really important to like address that. It's not their fault. They're doing their job. They just are handcuffed in so many bureaucratic ways that it's just extremely frustrating. And so like when you know, hear on social media that people want more government intervention and the government's protecting us, it's they're not. And the only way that people are going to understand what's actually happening is through lived experience and through people like us talking about it. So I'm really happy that we're doing this episode. And I think like our whole behind the scenes stuff at WAGS surrounds this and trying to change this for people like us and other couples. Cause like we said earlier, we see it so often on the discussion group where, you know, they're just fuck it, I'll do it myself, or I'm not going to wait for that person to come and I'll just do it myself because I can. And then you have insurance companies and government programs literally writing policies that says, well, because they're married, she can. They're basically saying, fuck it, she can do it, right? And so you have those policies being written and maintained by the very people that are supposed to look after the dependent in society and the people in society that need the most help. So it's generally a very screwed up situation. And I don't mind playing around in it because I know how silly it is. And I know when you're in the situation yourself and you're living it, it's easier to see what needs to be changed and how. And so I think we're in a really fortunate position where we can not only see and hear the struggles of our community, but we can also play into our own struggles because we live this life just like our listeners. You know, we are caregivers to our partners. It is what it is. And a lot of us got here in less than ideal ways. And that's fine. We accept reality. But talking about this and really just pushing this onto people is just really, really important. So this morning I did an interview with CBC and we've been working with it's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. So it's kind of the mouthpiece of the government, which is interesting. Here in Canada, they're one of the main media arms of the government. They're paid for by tax dollars. But we actually had an interested reporter message us and say, I want to talk to you about unpaid spousal caregiving. So I just finished, right before we started recording, I just finished talking to Michelle at CBC and explaining to her just the situation at hand and how it doesn't really matter if you're private or government insurance that this is happening where, you know, we are doing skilled labor for zero pay and zero recognition. And it's been heightened since COVID. And she actually said to me, well, that's the reason I'm doing this story because everybody is more interested in what is happening now because it affects everybody, right? After COVID. And they saw the holes in the system during COVID and how, you know, people couldn't get care and people were dying without caregivers. And it was just such a mess. Anyway, so speaking with her, she was asking me some last minute questions about, you know, like what I experienced and like what happens when the care doesn't show up. And so I was talking to her about, and I've talked about this in earlier episodes of the podcast, but I'll just do like a little refresher because we're on the subject today. In 2015, when my partner had just been injured, we had a nurse that missed 82 shifts. And she was responsible for helping my partner and she would clock in on her cell phone. So it showed her agency that she was working. And then she would call me or message me and say, I can't come in today. I'm so sorry. And so me being naive and liking her and actually believing her, I was like, oh no, like, you know, how can I help? And so I just ended up saying, fuck it. I'll just step in and do it. And so that was my life for about a year and a half when I was stepping in and taking over for her missed shifts. And during that time, she had explained to us, oh, I have a disease of some sort of disease. I think it was, she said it was multiple sclerosis or something like that. And so we felt terrible for her because we did like her and we believed her and, you know, we wanted the best for her. And she said, like, I'm so sorry. I need to work. Like she had ended up coming once a week instead of the four or five times she was supposed to come in. And so when that was all exposed, you know, we never got a sorry this happened. I never got compensated. I never was told, thank you for stepping in and looking after your partner when she didn't show up for her shifts. Like, we're so grateful. No, no, no. I never got any of that. I just got kind of shoved under the table and told, we're going to look at this behind closed doors. And we're going to deal with this behind closed doors. And, you know, not even a real apology. And so I would say that changed the whole course of our life together. Me and my partner is we realized, you know, I could just say, fuck it and do it. And I did actually like providing his care. I thought I did a better job than them and I could do it faster and we had more independence and we didn't have to wait around for people canceling shifts all the time. You know, we had another nurse that would say, oh, I'm a mom. I can't come in because of my daughter. And it's just like, okay. But at the same time, it's like, what do you do to maintain your sanity when that happens over and over and over again? Do you crumble up into a ball and say, I'm too stressed, I can't handle this? A lot of us do. But then there's also a silver lining where it helps us to be more resilient under stress, for sure. But however, there's a lot of women on the private group right now who are dealing with this right now, trying to find their own balance. And they're trying to find their level of sanity and their mental and emotional wellness. And they can't do it when they can barely keep themselves afloat and they have to keep stepping in when they do need the care. So let's talk about like some tools. You know, we've all been there. We've all been stressed out. We've all needed help and had the help not show up. It just happens, right? So let's talk about like the people that are going through it right now. What would you say as someone who this literally just happened to, how do you keep yourself in a space where you can be productive and have a good relationship while stepping in when needed?
I think like the first, it's so different for everybody, right? Because it's like, we have so many variabilities within like our family life, our situation, our personal experiences that no two women are going to be able to take the same advice. But for myself, I think one of the main things that I try to do is sort of gauge. What happens is I do a bit of a scan, and I've been like that my entire life. I do a bit of a scan, like what is the energy in my house right now? How many tasks do I need to do right now? And I gauge to see like my stress level. Am I stressed out? Is this something I'm capable of doing? Instead of just jumping in and rescuing, which is something that I've also been working on to sort of say no to, which is all a part of our personal boundaries and what it is that we're actually capable of doing without any, like I said, without later on it having backfire in your face. It's like you're in the middle of transferring your partner into bed and then you have like an explosive situation where you're like, I'm so frustrated. It's like, don't do that, right? Just avoid it. So if that means taking some time, just going into another room, doing some breathing, or go for a quick, make yourself a cup of tea or do whatever it is you need to do for yourself. I think that's important because you want to be able to manage caring for yourself while you care for other people. And sometimes that means doing things for yourself first. So I think that's honestly, if I could give anybody advice, that would be it, is just be honest and truthful with yourself if this is something that you're capable of doing. And whether, I mean, unless it's a life and death situation, nothing needs to happen right that second. You don't need to just be like, I've learned this lesson so many times where I get really overwhelmed. My nervous system's going crazy. I'm super stressed and I'm like, I'll just do it. It's fine. And then I start doing things and things go flying and falling and things I reach for fall and the lift is swinging from the roof like a chandelier, you know, things get crazy. And it's like, no, you don't want to do that because then you've got two people that are like, one person's like, what the hell's going on? I'm unable to do anything for myself. And the other person's acting like they're running a circus. So take a step back. And the other thing that I like to do is, for example, if I have my partner, if I know that I try to sort of multitask, and I think this is actually one of the best things that I learned from serving, right? We've learned, anybody who's been a server in their life in a restaurant will know that there are some very valuable skills that you learn, and it's a very humbling experience to have been a server and to be able to know how to multitask and keep your cool. So the other thing is I like to sort of dance on the toilet. I know that I have that space for myself for that period of half an hour or 45 minutes or whatever that is to be able to do something that I need to do, like do the dishes, sweep, feed the dog, walk the dog, fold some towels, do some laundry, do whatever it is. Just pick one task. Don't try to do everything all at once. And then that way you can sort of have a balance. And then I sort of look at the whole picture of, okay, let's say I took an hour or an hour and a half for us to getting ready. Then I sort of look at my list of things that I've actually been able to accomplish in between. And then once he's dressed and ready, I can hop in the shower and get ready. And it's like, bam, there you go. We're ready. We're ready to take on the day. That's just some of my, those are just some of my quick tips of keep your cool, get organized. It's not that bad. Nobody's, you know, in a life or death situation. You can just get it done and then you carry on with your day. And I think our brains try to sort of, we start creating this narrative. We get really busy, busy minded with, oh, this is not fair. Why do I have to do this? Nobody came today. Oh, the system sucks. Like, you can totally spiral out of control with the chatter in your brain. But also I like to sort of take a deep breath and like connect my brain to my surroundings. Okay, I'm in my house. I'm safe. Everything is fine. Actually, nothing. There's no earthquake. It doesn't have to be that way. And I think that sort of kind of helps you gauge what you can do.
I think that like what you said, just even just like just trying to be present as much as possible. I think as someone who has been overwhelmed herself, and you know, you talk about overwhelm. I was definitely overwhelmed. A lot of the time do get overwhelmed still, but just having those tools of like immediate, what can I do in this moment to help myself get out of fight or flight? Because I find a lot of the time when you have something unexpected happen or when you're overwhelmed, a lot of the time it's like, it's from other things piling up that don't even have anything to do with the care. And it's like, you can go there, you know, you can go there if you want, or you can just get present and say, you know what, my body is reacting to something that doesn't even have anything to do with the present moment. And I'm bringing that into the present moment and I'm overreacting to something that, like you said, it's not a life or death situation. You are just physically responsible for helping that person. You are not in control of anything else. Right. So it's like putting yourself into that perspective and like being like, okay, what do I see around the room right now? I think Patricia was the one that taught us this, where you find an object that is black and then you find something that is blue, or you find something that is square, and you look around the room and you ground your feet in and you really, really get into your body and you say, okay, I'm here right now. What is right in front of me? What can I look at right now and focus right on the present moment that isn't, oh, I have so much to do tomorrow, or, oh, so-and-so is coming later and I have to do this and this and this. Like, let's, like you said, you can blame the systems all you want, that, you know, not that we're saying that there's no, like, that's a huge cause of stress. Like, this whole systemic thing of, you know, caregivers and partners of people who are disabled have to do literally everything. That's not sustainable, but it's the truth, right? And that, having that as a weight on your shoulders, when you're in fight or flight and you're, you know, trying to help your partner when someone doesn't show up, that's not the right time to go there. So just focus on like what you're doing now is like a huge thing for me. Like, and then also, like you said, breathing. If anybody really wants to reset their nervous system, please look up the physiological sigh. I know we've talked about this in the past, but we can't stop talking about it enough, where you breathe in 2 short breaths and then double the exhale. And you can find it on YouTube, and that you do that, you know, they like to say, oh, do it 5 times. Me personally, I like to do it 20 to 30 times before I start feeling a difference in my body. And so you just kind of play around with that, and that actually physiologically resets your whole body so that you can actually see things clearly. Because let's face it, how many times have we just said, fuck it, I'll do it. And we've had to be doing it, and we've either gotten in a fight with our partner, or we've gotten in a fight later down the line with our partner, or we've said things we didn't want to say, or we've thrown things across the room, or, you know, something's happened that could be totally preventable if we weren't in such a fight or flight overwhelmed state, which is a physiological state. It is not something you can talk your way out of. It is a reaction that's happening in your body, and it is primal and ancestral. And for anybody who thinks that they can talk to themselves out of that state, like, I'd like to meet them. I'd like to meet them, and I'd like to hear their thoughts on that. Because as far as I know, from all the research I've done, all the learning I've done, that is not possible. So you have to do these grounding activities, physiological breaths, breathing, whatever you need to do to ground yourself into the present moment so you can see things clearly. And then everything looks different. But I mean, we could go on all day about this, but actually talking about this and actually bringing this to light, I know there's a lot of women out there who are going through this big struggle right now and trying to figure this out. So I know that there's going to be a lot of appreciation. I think we can find a lot of nuance and community in this, because again, we're kind of the only platform that likes to talk about this. So.
Right. And one of the other things that I just want to quickly touch on, around or high stress situations that kind of catch you off guard, such as these, is that something that's really helped me is realizing that life is really just not fair, right? Like, especially when we get that chattery chatter going on in our heads and we're like, ah, this sucks. Life's not fair. This is not fair. Why me? Why does this have to happen to me? It's, I start to realize, I'm like, oh my God, like everything in life is not fair. Like, what is fair? There's no such thing as fair. It just is. There's no good or bad. It just is. And how you're able to sink into that presence of that is, whatever that is truly what shapes, that truly really is what shapes your problem solving skills and your personality over the long term and how you're able to navigate and manage. And that actually kind of seeps into your relationships. And actually, Dan and I were talking about recently where we're talking about longevity. And he was sharing with me an article that he had read about what is it that keeps, they did a study on centurions, I believe in Europe. And it was what keeps
the blue belt people.
Right. And what is it that keeps people living the longest and being the happiest? And a lot of people say, well, you know, exercise, drink lots of water, try to keep your stress at a minimum, don't smoke, don't drink, all that stuff. But the matter of the fact, actually, that's not what it is. The number one cause for keeping people living happy and long is the quality of your relationships within your communities. And that's basically, so if we're able to manage our stress and we're able to be in a good mood where we take that extra 30 seconds, 10 seconds to say hello to the barista making your coffee at Starbucks or whatever, and actually connect and look at them and say, how are you? And if you're able to continue doing that practice over a long period of time, that is what keeps you living the longest. But it all starts with managing. How do you manage situations that catch you off guard that you're like, that's not fair, right? It's like, it all starts with you having the control over your own mind and over your own reactions of what is that stimuli that's happening that's making you feel a little bit on edge.
And also realizing that you do have control over that. I think that's a huge thing when you're in fight or flight and you just, your body is just getting away with you and you're feeling, you're having headaches, hot flashes, you know, things are not going well. You do have somewhat of control over using tools to help yourself calm down. And a lot of people think that they don't. So they reach for an external something, but it's like, right, you have everything you need. And I know that's really hard for some people to like really understand, but you do have control over how you perceive the situation. That's why, you know, the ancient texts and the Taoists and all, you know, the Buddhists, they all talk about looking at what is in front of you and realizing that it too is a gift. And it's all about how you react to it that matters. And it's the human experience, right? Like you were talking about earlier about how, you know, life isn't fair. And it brought to mind for me friends and family and people that come into contact with us that, you know, we like to talk about, like, what we always say to each other, like, well, why they don't ask us about what's going on in our life, but they talk about their problems. Like they're the worst problems in the world. And it's all relative, right? Like to those people that haven't gone through paralysis, their problems are the worst problems. And like human beings are literally designed that way, where it's like, it is all relative. Your problems are the worst problems. We are self-centered beings. We are people that like to think that our problems are the worst problems. And like, so that, you know, really, really helped me is realizing that like, no one's going to come save you but yourself. And if you start looking at life that way, where it's like we are all living different human experiences and we're all in charge of our own human experiences to a certain degree, and we take ownership for that and we realize that like someone who we may think has a cushy life with no problems actually has problems that they think are the worst in the world. And I challenge anybody listening to this right now to actually find someone that doesn't think that their problems are the worst in the world or doesn't think that they're going to collapse at some point. We are all struggling with this. And, you know, we could talk about this all day as well, where it's like, you know, it's the fault of systems and the media that make things look like people have great lives. It's just, it's not true. And so that kind of helps you to ground into the present moment as well, where instead of running away from the situation that's happening in front of you, where, you know, so many things would have to change in order for it to not be happening in front of you. Literally everything would have to change. It's divinely placed in your life, even though it's a shitty situation and it was unexpected and it's causing a great deal of overwhelm. It's there purposefully and it happened and it's happening. And so getting to that place where you're like, okay, this is happening. Like, how do I move through this in the most graceful way, not by denying my emotions and not by like being like, go away, because that's resistance, right? But like you said earlier, like looking at it and feeling through it and giving yourself that superpower, which is, I would say, is the most of all the superpowers, the highest of all the superpowers, being able to navigate a stressful situation and realizing that it's not permanent.
You know, I like now that you're speaking about this, I sort of reflected back to the first 3 years of like Dan's injury. And ours was a bit different than a lot of people. In terms of it happened overseas and we were in a socialist country with very limited, very outdated medical equipment with zero hands-on staff. Nobody was there to swoop in and save us. It just didn't happen. So I think like now that I think about like the transition from Cuba, the everything that happened in Cuba, coming here to the hospital system, to the way things were, I would say that trained me. And actually, I know there are other women in this community who the same situation happened when your partner got injured overseas. It trains you to sort of push aside your sadness. I remember actually one of the nurses in Cuba. I remember I was crying and crying and crying because I was just like in so much shock, like what just happened. I had to go back to the resort to get our things, but not even our things. I was on medication at that time that I needed to get my own medication or else I would have been lying on the floor beside Dan completely out of it. And so I remember even at that time, just sitting there crying and leaving the room, but you know, when he would fall asleep and go make a phone call and still cry. And one of the nurses came up to me and she said, "Elena, why are you crying so much? He's alive. He's going to be okay." And I was like, just in that moment, I was so mad because I was like, how dare you? You don't know anything about this. And I think the overall feeling, like I remember when we were leaving Cuba and we were sort of saying goodbye and it happened so abruptly, the air back came in so fast and we just had to grab our bags and we were running to the airplane that only had a certain amount of time to be on like the helipad or whatever in the airport or whatever, and it just happened so fast I couldn't even like think about what just happened, like, oh my god, we're leaving or we're here now, we're going, and we've been waiting for this moment. And after we were sort of saying goodbye to everybody and you know the plane's leaving and our hands, you know, we're grabbing people's hands saying goodbye and then our hands lose contact. I sort of thought to myself, we get to leave this and go back and get different kind of care in North America now. Like for the people there, the locals there, even the hospital staff there, it's like, this is your reality. And it took me a long time to realize what she meant by that. Because like I said, I was so pissed off. I was, oh my God, well, he's paralyzed. What do you mean? Why am I crying? And now I realize, like you said, it's all about perspective. It really is all about your own personal frame of reference, your socioeconomic status, whether you can afford to get the best care or not, whether you can provide or you can get enough catheters for the month, or whether you're boiling your catheters and reusing them. There's so much attached to that. And I think it's a good perspective for everybody, for every spouse in our community to keep that in mind. because it can always be worse. And what is that even worse? Like, what does that even mean to other people? You might look at them and be like, wow, your situation's really tough. But to them, they might be like, actually, this is great. We've come a long way.
And like, how does that help you in the present moment? Like, I always think like that. I'm always like, well, it could be worse. But then to deny that and say, no, it couldn't. This is the worst situation. It's like, how does that help you? It doesn't. Right? So it's like, what's the point of going there? Like feeling bad for yourself, feeling like, you know, things could have been different. Like, can you imagine everything that would have had to had been different? Like you could trace this, like you could literally have a fun meditation where you trace back all of the decisions and choices and things that would have had to been different in order for things to turn out differently in anybody's life. And you really realize when you start doing that, you're like, it's trippy. Like you feel like you're high or something. Cause you think about, okay, this would have had to been different. This person literally wouldn't have had to be born, which means that this grandparent and this person couldn't have been born and they couldn't have done this. And you can trace it back so long where you really, really, if you're looking for a perspective shift, try doing that. Set aside half an hour and go back in time and be like, this would have had to been different. This would have had to been different. And you'll realize that everything is in the exact right place that it has been.
You're going to be in more than half an hour. You're going to be in a very deep slumber by the end of it. You're going to be out for the next 2 weeks, kind of like, what's a guy in Office Space where he gets hypnotized by the hypnotist who ends up like,
yes.
So he's like forever in a hypnotic state.
Well, it's like for all those people that like, I remember like, and I know currently like what it's like when you want to shift your perspective, but you can't force it. And you're just like, fuck, I want to be at a different place. I want to see this differently, but I still am not at that place yet. Why? Well, there's something to be learned that you haven't learned yet. Right. But it's like, that's the best way to kind of shake yourself into kind of the surrender movement where it's like, okay, what can I do about this now? Everything would have had to be different in order for me to not be here. It was the way that it was for a reason. And you know, there's nothing you can do to change it. So why not accept it, right? You can kind of force yourself. I like to play brain games with myself during times of stress, like doing that thinking backwards, how many things would have had to be different for things to be different and this and that. I like doing stuff like that. I like trying to like almost like mind fuck myself where I'm just like, okay, what can I do right now to change what's happening? Whoa, there's actually nothing I can do. I've tried everything and it's the same and this is happening. So what is the point of getting my panties in a knot, right? Like getting to the place where you can do that and playing those games with yourself. After you do your breathing, after you physiologically reset yourself and you ground yourself and do all of that stuff, you can play little mind games with yourself where you can use your mind for something other than a tormentor, because the mind will torment you, right? Like you can actually control it and say, okay, what can I use my mind for right now? Can we play a little game? I don't know.
Instead of being a prisoner of your mind.
Yes.
Retire in your mind. That's what we used to always say, right? It's like release yourself. It's interesting that we're talking about this because today after our podcast, I'm going for my first hypnotist.
Oh, cool.
Session. So I'm very interested to see what that's all about. Maybe I'll be able to share some of my experience with anybody who's looking to get, I don't know. I want to say unstuck, but I have no idea what I'm going to get. Maybe I won't get anything. Maybe I'll get a swift kick in the rear.
So but, for those who don't understand what that is, do you like explain why you're doing this and what you're hoping, like what this is?
I don't want to make this podcast too much about me at all, but through the course of my life, I've experienced some trauma like everybody else. Every single person on this planet has, in their own perspective, experienced trauma, whatever that looks like. And I have taken the journey to get off of SSRIs in September. I'm finally at the point where it's like, I don't start crying on. I mean, I still do get very teary-eyed about certain like triggers. So it'll be like, I don't know if I see, like the other day, Dan and I were trying to pick a movie. He was like, oh, I was like, what about Hatchie? He's like, you know, that's about a dog passing away. So I was like, oh God. Oh. And then I like went to this like place and I was like, oh my God, like trying to swim out of this hole. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sinking. I'm sinking. No, trying to breathe head above water. No, get out of there. And then that's where it's like a very fine balance between trying to be like, no, 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 no. And then think about something else, like a chair, clap. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so I am trying to work through that, but, it has been almost a year since the passing of both my dogs and my mom. And I believe, like I always say, new traumas bring up old traumas. Even when we think that we're over the old stuff, it keeps on popping up. And for myself, I don't believe that I keep on thinking I'm over it. And then I'm like, well, maybe I'm not. Like, maybe I'm still pretty stuck. So the point of this session, I believe it's going to be quite a long session, is to get yourself to sort of dig through the subconscious stuff that you don't know is still there, that maybe keeping you back. Maybe you're just, honestly, when I wrote the email yesterday to my practitioner, she said, tell me exactly what it is, Elena, that you want. What is it that you really, really want? And I sat there for a minute and I thought to myself, well, it's not tangible. Like, not tangible. It's not materialistic. It's not like I want something that's materialistic. I don't want anything particular, right? I just want to be free, to have freedom. And it's not a magic wand that you can wave either. And it's something that's really important for anybody in our community, especially the, like we were saying, if you're in a high stress position, you're supporting your partner. I think all of us can sort of take a step back and think, how can we better ourselves so that we are stronger for ourselves, not just so we can be a stronger caregiver for our partners, but something that is going to be able to be beneficial for us for long term, for the evolution of us and the version that we're evolving into and away from. And it's all of it. It's all connected. So like I said, I will keep you updated on what happens because I have no idea what's going to happen, but I'm very excited and I'm very open to learn more. At the very least, I am just really, really pumped to be present and be challenged. So
isn't that really cool though? Like the silver lining of this injury, when you can get to a place where you have a little bit of like just distance from the stress, you can see that, wow, if this hadn't happened, I would not be dealing with this stuff right now. I would probably be suppressing it and running away and doing something. Like, I feel like a lot of us think that way, where it's like, it is the silver lining where you're like, because I have to be so balanced all the time, I have to work on this stuff at a younger age when normally people are not even aware that they have any issues or any suppressed traumas, right? And so it is such a blessing in a way. Like, there's always that blessing, right? We live in a world where the bad things that happen can be turned into just amazing, amazing blessings, even though they don't look like it at the time. Well, so that's really cool.
Yeah. And to somebody else listening to this, they might be like, that's my worst nightmare, to be so vulnerable in this practitioner's office, to be going under some sort of hypnosis like that. To some people, they're like, that's my worst nightmare. I would never do that, because you also, maybe you're afraid of what you might dig up. Maybe you're not ready to look.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's also a point in your life where you have to sort of position yourself to be the bird's eye view spectator on your own life and say to yourself, I can either sink or swim for myself, not for anybody else. I think that's a big one. It took me a really long time to be able to recognize that I need to do these things for me, not because it's going to be beneficial for my neighbor, for my family members, or my dogs, or my partner, or anybody else, but to be able to really come to that conclusion on your own that you want the best wellness for yourself. Yeah, so anyways.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And I can't wait to hear more about it, because I feel like this is definitely a tool with an experienced practitioner where, you know, you can get a lot out of it, right? I'm really, really interested in hearing about your experience when you're done. Cause like, I've never done that. I've done like YouTube hypnosis things, you know, where you go and make sure that like there's multiple million views and people haven't been like, you know, abducted into the abyss of Satanism or whatever. like, I'm excited, you know, where you're just kind of like paranoid. You're like, oh. So I've done a few of those and it was just like a deep meditation. So I'm excited to see, like, a lot of people think hypnosis is like, oh, the person controls what you do. And it's just like, it's not that type.
Yeah. It's not like a DMT trip. Like, this is not any sort of weird hibbity jibbity stuff that I'm going through. It is something that I'm always very open to. It's funny because my mom, while she was alive, you know, she took me to a very progressive, quote unquote, very new age sort of therapist when I was like in my teens, because I was very open to this. I really wanted to learn more to see what model fit best for my healing outside of just going to church and being a good Christian girl and going with my mom. So I was actually quite surprised that this is something that, out of all the things that I could have come across, this is one thing that she never really gave me a hard time about. She was never like, oh, this is part of the occult or Satan or any of that stuff. So now that
that's wild.
At, yeah, I know. The hypnosis.
Considering she thought yoga was like Satanism.
Yeah, she thought that I was part of a religion that was very far from hers while she was alive because I did yoga. So that's okay. She's in heaven. She knows the truth now that we are all spiritual beings and that it's okay to have different perspectives while still being respectful of each other and still loving each other and accepting each other.
Well, I think that's a really cool thing. And if you are listening right now and you have experience with hypnosis, dealing with stress or trauma, please email us at wagsofsci@gmail.com, because we're always looking for other women who have these lived shared experiences, because, you know, like you were speaking about earlier, Elena, the blue belt or the centurions, community is the number one most important thing for longevity and everybody needs it. We saw what happened when people didn't have it during COVID. It was a disaster. So we hope that if you have anything to share with us, or you have a story about caregiving, or you are fighting the system yourself and wanted some words of inspiration, we would love to hear from you. Yeah. And anyone who's listening today, we thank you for your attention. We thank you for being on this journey with us. We are extremely fortunate that we are able to talk about this stuff and that we actually have people listening. and that there's a lot of stuff happening and we're really proud to be a part of this generation where there's a lot of things shifting, and it may be very scary, but it is very necessary. And we all need to just jump on board with our expertise, because like it or not, we have a lot of skills and expertise as caregivers, as women, as people who are sympathetic to the cause of spinal cord injury. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for paying attention. Thank you for caring. And if you need any more information or want any more information on how you can champion the cause in your own city, please also reach out over email. We can help point you in the right direction.
We'll catch up with you guys next week. Cheers.
Cheers.